From a fairy tale as bridesmaid at the wedding of Princess Grace of Monaco to a woman's shelter. Daughter goes in search of the truth about her mother. We take on the stigma of mental health. That's tonight on Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell. Nina Giles is the youngest daughter of Carolyn Scott Ribold, a model best known as one of Princess Grace Kelly's bridesmaids. Having had a successful 20-year career in advertising, digital marketing, and sales, Nina now serves as chief operating officer for Giles Communications, a leading public relations company. She's a tireless advocate for the mentally ill, having served as vice president of the board of the Association for Mentally Ill Children of Westchester for 10 years. The co-author is Eve Claxton, a writer, editor, Peabody Award-winning radio producer. She's been an editor or co-writer on numerous nonfiction books. And the new book, The Bridesmaid's Daughter, From Grace Kelly's Wedding to a Women's Shelter, Searching for the Truth About My Mother. Welcome, Nina. Good to have
you.
In studio as well.
Thank you for having me here.
And I got to tell you, one reason that interests me this, because we don't normally do half fairy tale shows, but the fact that the focus on mental illness, because I look at my family, and from my mother's generation back, alcoholism like crazy. No one ever talked about it. No one ever tried to put together if there was anything underlying. And I personally believe there's a lot of manic depressive nature of which you can take medicine for now. But if nobody's talking about it, there's a lot of undue suffering, and this story is going to reveal similar kinds of things. So I'm happy to do this and bring it to the forefront. First off, you seem to have had an unrelentingly sad childhood in many ways. First, did you feel that way? And B, how tough was it to relive it as you went through this in your search?
Yeah, it was very painful going back to my childhood and also just thinking about what happened to my mother and that her life could have been so different. As far as my childhood, I got my school records, and I was able to look at that and really understand that what I thought happened did happen because, when I became a mother, a young mother, I thought, how could this happen? How could somebody keep a child out of elementary school? Because I was literally there maybe the equivalent of a little more than a year in terms of days in school. Yeah. I would go for 35 days or 55 days, 1 year not at all, 1 year 5 days. How does that happen? Hopefully it could not happen today.
Did you know you weren't really sick or you were sort of brainwashed?
I think, it was very complicated because my mother told me that I had internal bleeding, that I had rheumatic fever. At one point, tuberculosis was mentioned. There were many illnesses.
That colonic irrigation particularly seemed like abuse, almost like waterboarding.
Yeah, I don't think anything that she ever did was abuse. I really do believe that her delusions and how ill she was, that's what led her on that path to take me for some unusual tests like that.
Yeah. We're going to get to the fairy tale portion of this, but let's continue on this line. There was your mother ends up in a women's shelter. It's kind of equivalent of a homeless shelter, right?
Yes.
And you found out the tabloid, and you've been kind of beaten up about that. How can, someone's mother end up in from an affluent family or from a successful family? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, it didn't happen overnight. When my parents got divorced in 1978, when she got the settlement, she would have been fine. She wasn't well, but she would have been okay. Within 6 months, her money was gone. So that was really sad. Part of it was given away. She would give away a dollar bill at a time to faith healers and different charities. The other part, I think, was lost because of a corrupt stockbroker who, was just churning the stocks, knowing that she didn't know how to manage her money. So after that, she sort of bounced around to different places, living with, different people, and then eventually ended up in the homeless shelter. I don't think most people end up there right away. They don't go from the affluent,
right.
Sort of.
Did she unable to ask for help or whatever? Because obviously her own family would have been happy
yes.
to put her up.
We all tried to help her. Initially, we tried to help her get a job. She had relatives that offered her a condo in Florida. A cousin in Ohio offered for her to come back. Her mother wanted her to come back. It's very difficult to deal with someone who doesn't know that they're ill.
Right. And you guys didn't really know right at that stage.
No, we didn't understand what was
going on. Did you feel you were beat up for this?
Beat up for what?
Meaning for that your mother was in a homeless shelter and you're living in, Connecticut then? Or
In Westchester.
Westchester, yeah, sorry.
I never looked at it that way. I was just, I wanted to help her and I didn't know how. I was trying to reason with her directly. What I learned after years of her being there, when I finally spoke with the social worker and got involved with the people at the shelter and had the courage to go in and face what her life was really like, sort of at the same time that I was doing that and realizing I needed to be an advocate for her, she also developed a health condition that wouldn't allow her to stay there. So it all sort of came together at the same time. And
what was it like going into the shelter?
I still remember it. It was really, really hard because I would typically meet her outside and we would go, for lunch or whatever. And I think it was important for me to go in and understand what her life was like.
And you actually gave the local diner money, right, so that she could have her meals and
yes,
stuff?
Yes. My husband and I, at the time, there was a deli, that diner, that she was comfortable in. The owner was very nice to her, non-judgmental, and she could go and sit there every day and have, whether it was a hot chocolate, a slice of pie, or, mm-hmm. A sandwich. We knew that, and it was carte blanche, whatever she wanted.
And she had a great routine, right? I mean, she went over to a museum or something every day.
She had an amazing routine. She went to the Performing Arts Center Library at Lincoln Center, and she had always loved ballet, and she would go and listen to classical music on headphones. There were free performances of ballet there, during the warmer months. And then she had this little square on 58th Street between 5th and 6th, and she would go there. That was part of her routine every single day. And she believed that if she did this, she could elevate this little square to a shrine for humanity. And she was always talking about miracles and that miracles
very
would
nice.
Happen.
Very beautiful woman, by the way, right? I mean,
even in the later years.
I have to say, at the end of the book, there's a picture of you with her, and she's in bed, and she still looks
still
beautiful.
Still has beautiful features,
And beautiful eyes. Tell folks, what was her condition? What was it that they finally came up with? I know there was a feeling it was schizophrenia at first. But
yes. So in 1985, the first time I ever heard a specific diagnosis, she had been taken to Kings County Psychiatric Hospital, and the doctor called me, and I asked him, what is wrong? And he said, don't you know? I believe it's paranoid schizophrenia. And so, of course, at that time, I became obsessed with reading everything about it. E. Fuller Torrey wrote a book called Surviving Schizophrenia, which is kind of like Gone with the Wind, but mental health. It's huge.
Kind of, yeah.
I tried, read the entire book and just tried to learn everything I could. And there are definitely some similarities as far as her delusions. She had a flat affect and all that. So that's what I thought she was suffering from for years. But the more I learned about it, I always had questions because you don't typically develop those symptoms or become schizophrenic in your early 30s. It would be late teens, early 20s. So the profile didn't quite match. And I knew that I had always seen the difference in her in pictures after I was born. It's like a completely different person.
You can see it.
She's gone. Literally gone.
You use the word stepped out of the world, which is kind of the diagnosis ended up being
postpartum psychosis, yes.
Which I didn't even know existed.
Well, and even
I know postpartum depression.
Most people don't know about postpartum psychosis. And I was fortunate enough to meet with Dr. Jeffrey Lieberman at Columbia, the chair of psychiatry, and meeting with him and being able to share her records, everything that I knew. He listened so patiently and took it all in. And, and then he said she wasn't schizophrenic. It was what you've just described to me is classic postpartum psychosis. Yes.
Of which there is medicine for?
Absolutely.
So she didn't have
temporary, treatable today.
Wow.
Yes, her life and my, you know, the collateral damage of having that kind of untreated mental illness for our family was immense.
Did you feel your childhood was stolen from you?
Yes, we even referred to it as my lost childhood because most days I was home all day and, you know, I wasn't really unhappy. I wouldn't describe it as that. I think I was very fearful because I didn't have enough experience outside in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you think, you know, I never took a gym class. I was never allowed to. The few days I was there, she had, you know, notes.
After you find out that it's postpartum psychosis after you were born, did you have guilt over that or anything?
It's initially when after I left his office, yes, I was enormously depressed thinking about that. But, you know, that didn't last because realistically, you know, what could I have done?
And it's not your fault.
Yes.
Do you know what I thought it was? And we did a show on this over a murder case, which is Munchausen syndrome. Where the caregiver makes up all these illnesses for control and whatever. In this case, happened to be murders coming out of it. But they don't associate
I've explored all of those. The difference with Munchausen by proxy would be she didn't give me, like, poison or something to make me sick, so I'd have to go to the doctor.
To make you really sick, yeah.
Yes. I believe that she was trying to protect me and help me in her mind. I really believe that it's a different thing. And it does come up, just like you've mentioned it, but I have eliminated that with therapists and,
Did you find when you go through this whole search process that you were able to forgive her?
Oh, 150%. Yes.
Really? And we'll go through your dad later. To me, he might even be tougher to forgive, but we'll go into that. But could you forgive him as well?
Yeah, that is a little harder because he didn't. You know, nothing is ever just black and white. I know that on his side of things, if you separate it, he had 4 heart attacks when I was growing up.
Wow.
He was an older father. He was 50 when I was born. His career by the time I was 10, you know, wasn't going well. And he had a great career in advertising, working for McCann Erickson, J. Walter Thompson. Yeah. But he was nearing the end of all that. It's stressful living with someone who is mentally ill and not knowing what to do. The stress level in our house was unbelievable. But what I can't forgive him for is that she tried to get help. She was trying to see a psychiatrist.
And he
tried to control it. He was for sure an alcoholic. So there was that. He was more interested with his social life. He didn't want his life to change. Her life changed. She was completely isolated.
So he he
continued going to the parties and being in New York City and living that glamorous life. So,
which leads into where I want to go back in time a little bit now. Tell us a little bit about Carolyn's story, your mother, and how she met Grace Kelly.
Yes. Well, my mother grew up in Steubenville, small town girl, you know, with
big
dreams. Yes. Yeah. And she won the Sesquicentennial Queen contest that gave her the money to go to New York and pursue her dreams as a model. She could have gone for a screen test in Hollywood, but she wanted to be a model.
Howard Hughes, right?
Yes.
Tried to do a screen test.
Yes. And he offered her the, she could have had a full contract and moved out, but. You know, she didn't want to do it.
To me, she seemed to exercise good judgment there because his motives looked a little shaky, right, in that screen test?
I think.
Late at night, you know.
I think she just, for her, it just wasn't, you know, wasn't for her.
All right, so we're going to New York. First of all, how did she get the guts to go by herself to New York City at a young age without, you know, no job? Little Midwestern, you know, Steubenville.
It still amazes me that she did it. And when she got there, she met Grace. They became good friends. They were living next door to one another. And I mean, they did everything together, going to the clubs, El Morocco, Stork Club, ballets. My mother was responsible for encouraging Grace to model to fund her acting career. They were great friends.
By the way, She's obviously gorgeous, Princess Grace. Mm-hmm. But that first picture you put in there, she's rather plain looking, right? Or
Well, they were young.
They were young. Her hair wasn't anywhere near the way.
She lightened her hair and changed the hairstyle, which my mother also encouraged her to do.
There's the rumors that your dad had an affair with Grace Kelly. You end up not necessarily believing that, or?
Well, it was something I heard when I was younger. And then later, my mother did tell me that it happened. So I believe that most likely something happened. We'll never know the truth, really, because they're all gone. And what's important to me is that I know my mother either forgave her or never held it against her. And that
blamed your father, kind of, right?
Yes. Well, yes, and there may have been others.
Yes.
Other things that happened.
Did you get a chance to know Princess Grace at all? Or?
No, I was too young. I was the youngest of three, so my older sisters knew her very well when they were young, and because they lived in the same building in the Manhattan House, and my oldest sister, Jill, was her goddaughter.
Should Princess Grace have done more for your mom?
I don't think from that distance that she could have done anything. I know she didn't even really sense that anything was wrong until I was 12 and we made this trip to France very unexpectedly.
Yeah.
That's when she knew that something was wrong.
You know what surprised me? That it looked like she barely knew Prince Vanier when they got married. They basically exchanged letters.
Yeah. Letters, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, you think they were happily married, right?
As far as I know.
Because we have friends that at the end, she died in that car crash. We're told that she'd been depressed and that he was cheating on her.
Yeah, I try not to get tied up
in
things that I would never really
So talk about the wedding now. Becoming a bridesmaid and everything.
Yes, that was quite a time for all of them. When it was announced who the bridesmaids would be, there was a lot of attention, given to all of them, and all of the major dress houses, designers wanted them to wear their clothes because it was a week's worth of activities that they were going to, balls and ballets and celebrations, civil ceremony, then the ceremony at the cathedral. My parents flew over. They did not go on the cruise ship. Yeah. And they went with Sally Richardson also, Sally and Don Richardson. So there were two couples that flew over.
What's your mom told you about it?
Well, she would show me. We had pictures in the house from the wedding. She would show me. I don't really remember her telling me that much. A lot of it, actually, I've read about in books. And I became also, over the past 4 years, I became very close with Judy Balaban, who wrote the book, The Bridesmaids. So she's shared a lot.
All right, we get down to the last minute and a half. Was your mother's childhood really unhappy as well?
I believe so, yes.
Sort of heavy
again? Yes. Yeah, her stepfather was not very kind to her. There were a lot of issues with that and that I think were traumatic for her. She spent a lot of time with her cousin's family, and they were very, very kind to her. So she had a lot of family that loved her there, but her home life, I think, was difficult.
Was she devastated that she had to give up her career, or on the career side? I know moving out to the Long Island was tough. But
I don't think it was her first choice to move to Long Island, but at the time that they did, some models continue their career, but my mother was a junior model, so it was a little more difficult for her probably to have continued, because by the late 50s, the models were 5'10". They were tall. My mother wasn't the Vogue model. She was a junior model.
By the way, she modeled for Sears. My dad worked for Allstate for 30 years.
Yeah. So the Sears catalogs.
The wish book was we used to get that big, thick thing. Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell, 1490 WGCH Greenwich. We'll have more with the bridesmaid's daughter in our next segment. And we're back with Nita Giles, author of The Bridesmaid's Daughter, from Grace Kelly's Wedding to a Woman's Shelter, Searching for the Truth About My Mother. I want to talk now about the dream house and going mm-hmm. back to your childhood and everything, because it's pretty amazing. I guess start off with the overall dysfunction in the house.
Well, after I was born, I know that my older sister also was out of school for 2 years because she was left back and ended up coming back into school and being in the same grade as my middle sister, who was 2.5 years younger. And I think anyone who's a parent would understand that the dynamics of that would be a problem. Yeah, there was a lot of friction between them. You know, but my father was an alcoholic, so there was drinking, and just, I think, it wasn't very friendly after that.
The marriage was not in really...
I don't ever remember seeing them hug or be affectionate towards one another. He would take his meal, you know, he would eat in the den, and we would eat separately. I don't ever remember him sitting at the table with us to have dinner, only on holidays. Then it was a big show. You know, we would have fabulous, you know, parties or here and there, or Thanksgiving or Christmas, and people would be there, and it would be wonderful, and we'd all be together. But
she liked living in New York City, and suddenly you're in this isolated part of Long Island. How did that happen? He felt that he needed to...
Well, he was very close friends with Sherman Fairchild.
An inventor, right?
Yes. Yeah. And he had this magnificent castle that he had built after a castle that he saw in Normandy. I mean, complete with a moat and 20 acres, tennis courts, indoor, outdoor, pool. Just a beautiful, beautiful place. And he offered to gift my father the 5 acres that we owned and just build a house and come live out here. So I think at that point, you know, my mother's career was waning, and it was really something that he pushed for, though, that he wanted to do, because they had been going out for many years to Sherman's house for these fabulous weekends. All, you know, he would have all the models come out. He had a photography studio, so the famous photographers would come out, jazz performers. He had pianists there that were amazing. So they had been going out there for quite some time. And
why is it that your father never seemed to include your mother in these, you know, weekend parties and stuff, that he was gone the whole weekend?
Well, he did initially, but not, I don't think that after I was born, I think it kind of all that stopped for her. In fact, we Sherman referred to her as the little woman down the hill. And I think she stopped wanting to go. She was older. She, you know, wasn't the glamorous model anymore. Now she's competing with women that are maybe 10 years younger and still doing, you know, still living in that world. And she wasn't. So I think she started to feel uncomfortable.
And how are you feeling now that your dad's never around and doesn't appear to be much interested in you?
Well, I think as a child, you don't know what to expect. You don't. Now I can look back.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, whether, because your childhood may have felt normal for you.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't know that a father should be sitting at the dinner table or
and actually taking some interest in their children.
But there was a lot of fear in the house, because I learned to pretend. I learned a tremendous amount of control. Don't lose your emotion. Don't do
really
anything. Yeah, because I was afraid of him.
Because he was a very rageful guy?
Yeah, just emotionally abusive, I think.
Okay. Did you know he had a drinking problem? At your age, could you figure that out?
No, I think I figured that out more later.
Yeah, I find the same thing when you're in that. You don't really.
I don't think I really understood it.
And you know, it's a disease of denial, alcoholism anyway, so the whole family unit denies that it exists. So what's it like going to 50 doctors in a year? You could already see.
Yeah.
You do remember
not,
that.
Not fun. Not fun. Yeah.
And you don't think that, or I guess you think you're sick. You've been brainwashed.
Well, here's where I think it gets complicated, because she was telling me that I had all these illnesses, and then say it's the first day of school and I'm nervous, just like any child would be, and I have a stomach ache. So I'm saying, Mommy, I have a stomach ache, you know, and I'm afraid to go because I haven't been there enough. So that's where it gets complicated. Then if I told her I had a symptom like that, she would take me to a doctor. Whereas most parents would just say, it's okay.
Go.
You'll be fine. Yeah.
I got that complicated sense, too, that teacher that came in, that tutor,
yes.
and said, you know, get your butt in school. And you got up and defended your mother because you
exactly.
felt bad because she was crying.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah, she was trying to save me. And she had gotten to know me a little better than most teachers ever had a chance to, because that year I was in until November. That was a big deal. And then I stopped going, and she started coming to, you know, do the home tutoring, and I really liked her. I felt comfortable. I was learning. I remember things she taught me.
Were you totally shy? I mean, how did you know how to relate with folks, especially your old age, and
you never
saw them?
Well, it's funny, yes, because people today say, oh, you're so well-adjusted. It's taken years. You don't get over that kind of isolation overnight. I just learned to pretend that everything was okay.
What was your day like?
I watched, I loved the news.
Young age, too, right?
Yes, yes. And it's funny, I ended up working, you know, for a news organization later in life. But I loved the news. I'd watch Roger Grimsby and Bill Butel, 7 a.m.
God, we're showing our age here.
5 p.m., 11 p.m. You know, when I got older, I had a TV in my room. I'd always watch the news. And then I got hooked on soap operas.
Ew.
Yeah, I mean, for a very
That's worse
young
in school.
Child. I remember at 10 years old, all my children started. I watched every single episode.
Did you ever have a good relationship with your dad?
As a teenager, I think my father was not good with young children, really. So I think for all of us, because I have half-sister as well, that he became closer to us when we were older. So I did have some good memories, and I think that he felt sad about our lives, too, of course.
Which is interesting, because you don't get that feeling all in the book that it's almost completely abusive, that he just ignores you. I guess you were so much younger, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Let's go talk about your sisters now, because they're an interesting story, because they seemed to almost look after you.
Yes, they did. They were 6 and 8 years older, so...
They figured out what was going on.
And Before I did.
Right. They needed to get you out of there.
Exactly.
Was it hard for them to sell you on that, given that you'd been sort of brainwashed, or you were happy?
No, I was miserable.
You were miserable.
Yeah.
That's another thing, by the way, mm-hmm. that would have felt like a burden for me. They told you that, you know, you have to leave so they can get divorced because they're miserable. And that must have felt like a little bit of a burden on you.
Well, I think I was 14. I was aware that things weren't going well, but I don't think I was aware of everything, you know, all of the financial issues and that kind of thing. But I loved my sisters very much, and the idea of getting out of there was very appealing. Escaping.
Yeah, escaping. Why did they have such problems with the home? The same reasons you did? I mean, they weren't abused in the same way, kept out of school and stuff.
It was a very dysfunctional childhood. My father was, you know, did not get along with my middle sister at all. There were a lot of problems there. It was just not a, and they also resented my father for how he treated my mother.
Did you feel that missing school and all of that, when you're finally able to go, you were pretty smart. You picked it up pretty quickly, right?
I'm amazed when I think about it. So after elementary school, sort of in between, my mother had taken me on this trip to France.
We're going to talk about that in a sec, yeah.
But being in Lourdes, I felt like I was cured. So now I when I entered seventh grade.
And it was your sister that got you to go back into school because you're living with her or not?
No, this was seventh grade. So it was before that. I actually did have, when I was on Long Island, seventh grade, I was there a full year. Eighth grade was a little more than a half a year. And I started ninth grade. That's when I moved into the city.
Talk about the death of your sister, Robin, because that seemed to be literally the death fell of the whole family.
Yes. I mean, it was incredibly difficult because she was an amazing person. We, you know, just kind of person that would walk into the room and light up. It was a tremendous shock. I had never lost anybody before that. So to experience that with somebody that I was so close to and literally really the only person in the family that I trusted completely. I knew that my best interests... you know, what she cared about.
You said you shut down.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? given you were already controlling your emotions like crazy anyway?
Well, I was married at the time. That was my first marriage. I was very young. And that relationship ended because I just I couldn't give anything at that point. Yeah.
How did your mother react to Robin's death? Given everything that was going on,
it was a huge blow for her.
It was a huge blow.
Yeah.
Your sister Jill, was she the rebel?
No, I wouldn't describe her as a rebel. Robin was the rebel.
Robin was
in
okay,
a good
okay,
way.
Okay, got it. Okay. Yeah. Where is Jill today?
She passed away recently.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're sort of...
still processing it. We were estranged for...
Is that right?
Most of our adult years. After age 25, when I was 25, then we just weren't close after that at all. I think it's the collateral damage of a dysfunctional family. It's possible that she had some sort of mental illness, that was undiagnosed as well. I never really trusted her completely. There were many things that happened, that led to that feeling. Now, when I was younger, she did a lot for me, though. She taught me, really got me interested in reading. I lived with her in New York City. I lived with her in Philadelphia for a year. But after that, we were never really close again.
You know what struck me as interesting, and it's kind of surprising, is that your mom controlled you, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But when your sister comes to take you away, she lets you go with almost no problem, right?
Well, she wasn't entirely uninvolved in it. She did take me to visit to a few schools in the city. So the idea was that my mother would also be living in the city and my father. So we, I don't think she thought that we would never see each other again. She was still going to be somewhat involved, but I'd be living with Jill.
That period of time, how often did you see your mom?
It's hard to remember, but she didn't initially move into the city when I did. Once she was in the city, then I would see her, periodically.
Now, talk about the trip to France, to Lourdes, because that's a pretty amazing story and profound on the family, too. And you were going to go see Princess Grace as well, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Your dad kind of what bothered me about that is Princess Grace basically told you to go home because your dad was controlling. But tell the story.
Yes. Yeah. So my mother literally took me to France with the clothes on my back and a pair of pajamas. It wasn't supposed to go that way. She was taking me and my sisters, and we were going to go to France and start a new life there. And
without telling
my father, right. Only it didn't go as she planned because my oldest sister got caught taking some of the suitcases out of the house. And so he convinced her to stay, and my mother was not going to go back. So I went with my sister Robin and literally with the clothes on my back, and we took a cruise ship and went to France. And then halfway there, we got called to the purser's office, and it was Grace on one microphone and my father on the other, and pretty much against my mother. But I think you have to realize it wasn't a rational thing to do. So I can understand it now from that point. But at the time, it felt really horrible. Like they didn't understand and they were kind of against us.
Were you in the room on that call?
Yes,
so you hear Princess Grace saying,
yes,
get your butt home?
Yeah. No, I heard the whole
thing. And your mother must have been devastated. Right?
Unbelievable. She was just like, how could you do this to me? Because we didn't,
How old are you at that time?
12.
12, wow. And your mom processes this?
So now she has no hope of
staying over there. And
yeah. She wasn't planning to. We were planning to somehow see Grace, but she was going to start her own life. That was just.
Right. She's going to get a job and everything.
Yeah.
And The whole thing in Lourdes, that she thought you were going to be cured and everything, right?
That was the motivation also for the trip. There were two things, to get away and perhaps start a new life. But she really wanted to take us to Lourdes for a miracle. And I believe that just from hearing all of that with her, that I literally felt like I was okay. I was cured. And because the next year I was in school a full year. And
so it worked.
So I think that, yeah, I think in my mind, something actually happened there. And I have to tell you, I went back as an adult 2 years ago. It's a pretty powerful place.
I was going to ask.
Yes.
And describe going back there. And then you also went and toured whatever they call it, the palace in Monaco or whatever?
Yeah, it was an amazing trip. So my co-author and I went to Monaco, and we took a fabulous helicopter ride from Nice to Monaco, and mm-hmm. We were able to go on a private tour of the palace, and then also we visited the palace archives, the Princess Grace Irish Library, and everybody was wonderful. You know, when we were at the palace archives, they brought out the seating chart from the wedding in the cathedral, and my father was right behind, you know, Cary Grant, and
you found all kinds of pictures, right, from the whole the whole deal.
Yeah.
The why'd you get married? Were you 17 or 18?
Actually 17, but I left when I was 16. I think we actually got married when I was 17.
And part of it was because they had a real family, right, that you felt a part of it?
Yes. I met Chendo in school, and we fell in love. We had a great relationship. I loved his family. I spent a lot of time with them, and, you know, I didn't have that kind. I was just living with a 22-year-old sister at the time. So, and then after being in school for 2 years and doing really well, my father was going to, you know, he said, you can't go to this private school anymore. You have to go to a PS school, whatever. I visited the school and didn't feel comfortable with it. And at the same time, Chendo was offering for me to go with him to St. Thomas and start a life there.
And it didn't last.
No. We lived there 3 years. We were very happy. Loved it. I mean, it was a great experience. Not the average experience for somebody that age, but I traveled to 14 different islands. I worked. I was happy. I took piano lessons. I took my first exercise class at age 16.
So it might have survived if Robin hadn't passed away, or? But you said that shut you down.
Yeah, I think that had an impact. I think we had a great relationship, but that definitely.
Just quickly, where is Chendo now? I mean, you obviously reconnected with the book.
Yes, I did. He's a photographer. I believe he's in Miami. Yeah, very successful photographer.
All right, you're listening to Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell. We're going to focus on the stigma of mental illness in our final 9 minutes. All right, it's our final segment with Nina Giles, advocate for the mentally ill. First of all, you were terrified you were going to become your mom yourself, which really surprised me that you would even. But you left home young, you modeled, you gave up your career, and bad marriages, and three kids. So when did that hit you that, oh, my God, I'm on that path?
Well, my mid-30s, I guess. And I, at that point, was going into therapy for the first time. I had never talked about anything with any mental health professional before, so I had a lot of work to do. And I remember the therapist said to me, when you look in the mirror, who do you see? And I couldn't answer that question. Who was I if I wasn't David's wife or Nicole's mother? You know, who's Nina? So I had to spend a lot of time figuring that out and going back to my childhood.
How did you turn it around? You had two bad marriages or two that broke up?
I've been married three times.
You've been married three
all
times.
Very wonderful men.
And this one's going well, right?
Yes, this one's going really well.
How did you turn it around? I mean, I guess the therapy was the first thing.
Yeah, therapy was definitely important for me, and then establishing a career for myself when my children were old enough gave me a lot of confidence. I've been very fortunate. I've had amazing people in my life, very kind. And I think I've also had the instinct to look for good people.
And you've been very successful, too, in the in your career. No, so finding out about yourself and finding the right spouse and all that, did it give you a different perspective on your mom's life?
Yes, I think I had the strength also I've had a wonderful marriage with Peter and very solid family, what we do for our children and all of that. So I contrast that to how I grew up. It was very different.
All right. And throughout this whole deal, unless you get help, you suffer in silence.
Right.
Which is what you did in your family. So talk to us about how you can break that and how you get help.
People have to reach out. If you see somebody suffering, I would hope that you would reach out to that person just like you would if you saw that they had some sort of physical ailment. It should be the same. And not to be afraid. The worst thing that can happen is they say, mind your own business. Don't ask me anything. But you might actually be able to encourage someone to start the process and get help.
So I assume you feel that mental health ought to be treated like a regular disease, mm-hmm. including with medical coverage and everything.
Yes, absolutely.
What do you do for the Westchester mentally ill group for children?
Well, I'm not involved with that anymore. Okay. I was on the board when my daughter was younger and in the school that they are the sponsor of.
You had a special needs child yourself, right?
Yes.
Where is she now?
She lives in a group home. She is. She's had multiple different types of diagnoses and problems. She's on clozapine right now, which is a really serious medication.
What do they think she has? Or
honestly, there's so many different things. I mean, she has schizophrenic symptoms. And, she is developmentally disabled, so it's a dual diagnosis.
Genetic, we think, or?
Well, yeah, probably that's possible. I know that when she was born, we found out when she was 12 years old that she was born with a neoplastic embryonic tumor, which caused seizures,
wow.
which caused cognitive delays.
Wow.
And that all started at age 2.5. So she's got a very complicated medical history.
Do you visit her, or is it?
Oh yeah, yeah. My ex-husband, her father visits every other week, pretty much, and same with me. Every other week, she calls every day, and so very much involved.
Do you think the stigma of mental illness is going down, getting better?
Yes, I think it's getting better. I think it's great that people are talking about it. I'd like to see it go to another level where we are paying more attention to the seriously mentally ill people that, don't like the people that end up in shelters like my mother or homeless, the homeless population, where a third of them could be mentally ill, to do more there. I'd like to see, for instance, you have all the celebrities talking about depression and anxiety, and that's wonderful. And maybe we can get them now to take it another step.
And you're talking about folks that are like in the streets in New York City where they're obviously mentally ill and, mm-hmm. People are just thinking they're indigent people with no money.
Right.
The thing we were talking about off air now, do you think is the education system now geared a little bit better to handle this or, that you wouldn't have basically lost your childhood?
Well, that was one thing that I needed to know. That's why I visited my elementary school. It was a very powerful experience going there and having them validate really what happened to me. And they told me that if a child was even absent for, say a week or 2 weeks, they would have a social worker and a psychologist visit the home and the parent in the home to see. Yeah. But I didn't get really a definitive answer that after 30 days,
they
it
do
can't
something.
Happen. And it when you have a parent that is coming to the school with notes from doctors. She found doctors that would give her notes. There was a homeopathic doctor that she found when I was in fourth grade, and he wrote the note saying she has rheumatic fever, she can't attend school.
So internal bleeding, whatever that meant.
I have no idea. I've never heard it since.
But in that, even in your time, the school was very concerned, and
yes.
they were mm-hmm. making you document everything. So is it just that it failed or that?
Oh, it definitely failed.
It definitely
yes.
failed. Okay, so yes. even with the doctors providing excuses, something fell through the.
Because they would then they would have me go to their physician. So they were trying, and their physician could never find anything wrong with me.
Okay, so as we finish up, tell us your mother's passing. I mean, she got into that nursing home or whatever, and.
Yeah, so she got into a nursing home on Long Island, and at least, you know, I could sleep at night knowing that she was there, she was safe, she was on medication. But in some ways, I don't know that she was necessarily happier because she couldn't do any of those things she did in New York. And she was, again, isolated on Long Island in a nursing home with nothing surrounding her.
How was your rapport then?
I always visited her. I always talked to her. She would call on the phone all the time.
She would, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of other relatives, too. She made a lot of phone calls.
Were you, was it sad to you, the whole thing, and every time you
always visited? Oh, yeah. It was always. It was incredibly difficult to be with her because
I remember my mother's mother was institutionalized, right? Mm-hmm. And she would drive up and bring me, right? But I wasn't told that she was institutionalized.
Okay.
She was just what looked like an apartment to me. And yet I would go home completely sad.
Yes.
So I sensed
you
something.
You sensed it. Mm-hmm.
So as we finish up, it's a great happy ending to the fairy tale, the start fairy tale, right? For you, I mean.
I survived.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, this has been an effort to reduce the stigma of mental illness, and you can see the suffering that Nita went through. So it's really important that people try and get help.
Yes.
Thanks to Nita Giles. The book, again, is The Bridesmaid's Daughter, From Grace Kelly's Wedding to a Woman's Shelter, Searching for the Truth About My Mother. This has been Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell. You can get our podcast at WGCH.com. You can search YouTube for Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell or Park City Productions 06604. See everybody next Monday night again at 6 p.m. for another edition of Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell.